Hello there. Is it just me, or is there a glaring omission in all the Matt Hancock WhatsApp messages released by the Telegraph? Now, I've got a surprise interview later on in the video. And at the end, has Richard been a naughty boy? We've probably all seen by now the reports of the expose of Matt Hancock's WhatsApp messages in the Telegraph. And the latest revelation, if it can be called a revelation after all that's already been unearthed, the latest revelation is that Matt Hancock and his team were quite happy to time the publication of data so as to maintain maximum psychological pressure of fear and guilt on the people of the UK. In fact, the plan, according to Hancock, was to frighten the pants off of everyone. So as far as I can see, what that meant was using psychological pressure to make the people, both children and adults, be far more terrified of the situation than politicians, advisers and officials were. Let that sink in. No wonder they were all partying while they were deciding how to deploy news of the next variant in order to gain the biggest psychological edge they could over the people they claimed to serve. They knew it was far less of a problem than they were letting on to us. They sought control. And look at the damage it's now caused and is still causing. Now, these Telegraph reports are called the lockdown files. But what about the medical intervention side of things? Are we to believe that no messages were exchanged relating to scaring people into rolling their sleeves up? Really? What messages were swapped regarding how good the stuff was and how they would manage any adverse data about it? Is this yet to emerge? Or are we being subjected to selective releases for a specific task, possibly that of destroying Matt Hancock's future? Or maybe to deflect the anger away from the untold billions spent on Big Pharma, maybe? And to possibly keep that particular gravy train motoring along? Don't you think it's time that all these files were released for the public inquiry and a court order made for the release by Hancock and others of all these messages in the public interest, not for a newspaper to string out a story? Now, I attended a conference yesterday, hopefully the first of many, discussing how to achieve what a lot of people out there would love to see. A coalition or alliance of the centre-right of UK politics, instead of the fragmentation that we're witnessing today, while the Tories slide ever more to the left with their tax, borrow and spend policies. And one of the attendees was successful businessman, Brexiteer and former Brexit Party MEP, Ben Habib. And I said to him that the Tories claim they've got Brexit done and that with the announcement of the Windsor framework, it was all over and everything is hunky-dory.
I wish it were hunky-dory. All the fanfare with which the Windsor framework was launched was really designed to cover up the fact that the Windsor framework completely fails to do that which it needs to if it were to restore Northern Ireland to the Union of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. You might remember, Jeff, that I brought a judicial review against the government over the protocol. And the result of that judicial review, there were two results, the principal one of which was that the Northern Ireland Protocol had subjugated key aspects of the Acts of Union. British citizens in Northern Ireland are not on an equal footing with British citizens on the mainland in Great Britain. There's a border down the Irish Sea. And it's not just about trade between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, it's about fundamental rights that citizens have in Northern Ireland. And the point about the Windsor framework was to address that. And they did quite convincingly put forward their case for how they'd done it. But actually, like all things with this government, When you start looking at the actual wording of what's been delivered versus what they say has been delivered, you discover that they're two completely different things. So, for example, Rishi Sunak talked about green lanes and red lanes. Green lanes being for trusted trader status, allowing goods from Great Britain to go to Northern Ireland without imposition, without the IRC causing any trouble. Well, it's not true. There are 21 different declarations you have to make in order to be in the green lane. And more importantly, that trusted trader status can be unilaterally withdrawn by the EU at any time. So the green lane is not in, it's not something we can rely on. It's a transitory thing that the EU can withdraw. And the red lane, of course, which will hardly be ever used, by the way, Jeff, because very few goods go from Great Britain to Northern Ireland and then to the EU. All of this is a nonsense. It's not needed. But that green lane and red lane doesn't signify the easing of trade restrictions. Actually, the real thing that it signifies is that goods are moving from one jurisdiction in Great Britain to another jurisdiction in Northern Ireland.
Agreed.
And nothing in the Windsor framework has changed that. They talked about how state aid law in Northern Ireland had now been relaxed under the Windsor framework. That's not true. All that the EU done is clarify that those firms in Great Britain that trade in Northern Ireland won't automatically be caught by EU law by virtue of trading in Northern Ireland, unless, of course, they do trigger some of the state aid provisions of EU law, in which case they would be caught.
Yep.
So there's no real change on state aid.
Nope.
So British government cannot support firms in Northern Ireland if it wishes to. Then the other big area that they championed was this Stormont break. They said that the democratic deficit would be addressed by the Stormont break. And the Stormont break basically works as follows. If 30 MLAs out of 90 in Stormont wish to object to a particular bit of new EU legislation, then they can do that by invoking the Stormont break. But the break isn't a break. The break is only allowed to be used in very particular circumstances when all other options have been exhausted, negotiations have been exhausted, and then it turns on Westminster granting Stormont the right to prevent that rule from coming into place. And if you get to that point, Jeff, then there's a final fly in the ointment, a very big fly in the ointment, which is the EU can take remedial steps against the UK for invoking the break, for which is a very, it's not even code, it's completely open. They're going to punish the UK for having the temerity to ever exercise this Stormont break. So the Stormont break doesn't work. And then the British government said, well, actually, at least as far as VAT and excise duties are concerned, we've now taken back control of that to Great Britain, to the United Kingdom, to Westminster. Because as you might recall in the protocol, VAT and excise duty was handed over to the EU because Northern Ireland is in the EU customs union. But again, the government wasn't telling the truth. We've only got relaxations on VAT for immovable objects in Northern Ireland, such as infrastructure, solar panels, that kind of thing. They have their VAT reduced, but not on goods. You know, beer, for example, sold in a pub in Northern Ireland is subject to our rates in the UK, our tax on alcohol in the UK. But if you sell it in supermarkets there, it's sold subject to EU tax rates.
Yeah.
So none of what Rishi Sunak described as being at the heart of the Windsor framework is accurate. The Windsor framework in some ways makes things worse because it actually, it's an attempt to get the UK to buy into the protocol. It's a deception. You know, at least with the protocol, we knew what we were up against. We had a judicial review. We knew that it broke the Acts of Union.
Yep.
We knew that there had not been consent of the people in Northern Ireland. This is a backdoor way to try and get the protocol done without us understanding what's going on. And the final thing I'll say on the Windsor framework is if you read the EU document on it, it says, and the EU, by the way, tell the truth because they've got nothing to hide because it's their victory. If you read the EU document on it, they say that the entire Windsor framework has been delivered through Article 164 of the Withdrawal Agreement, which states that all provisions of the protocol must comply with all implementation of the protocol, sorry, must comply with the terms of the protocol. So it's been done completely in accordance with the withdrawal agreement, which means there's no real change. So the Windsor framework has to be rejected.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me straight away was that when we were going through this and making the withdrawal agreement, it was going back and forth through all the EU 27, through the council. None of that's happened. So that means the withdrawal agreement itself cannot have changed one bit.
Absolutely right. There's no requirement for further approvals, which tells you this is a matter of implementation. It's not a matter of rewriting the protocol.
And it reasserts the protocol.
And it reasserts the protocol, which is the point I was trying to make, and you've made so brilliantly. It's one word. It reasserts the protocol, and that's pernicious, because it lulls us into thinking. They want to lull us into thinking that they've resolved the protocol. Actually, it reasserts the protocol.
Yes. One of the other things that a lot of people don't realise is that the European Union itself, as a body, is not signed up to the European Convention on Human Rights. That means that although every single person in the UK can take the government to the European Court of Human Rights, whether or not you want to be in that European Court, it means that they can. But no European Union citizen can take the European Union, the ECJ, the Parliament or the Council or the Commission to the European Court of Human Rights. Does that mean, therefore, that no one in Northern Ireland can do the same regarding the single market? Now that means that they're on another downer when it comes to equal rights with us. Yeah. Now I don't agree with membership of the ECHR, but for the Ramonas to say that it safeguards our human rights to go back in, that I would argue that it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't, because the EU isn't a member. That's a very pertinent point. You can't actually take the EU to this court, which, as I mentioned when I spoke earlier, requires, and in the Trade and Cooperation Agreement, we're required to recommit to the European Court of Human Rights. People keep telling me that, Ben, it's not got nothing to do with the EU. I know it's got nothing to do with the EU. But
the
under
Council
the TCA,
under
the TCA, they forced us back into it. Oh, not forced us back into it, they forced us to recommit to it.
Yes, we had to recommit, and it's in international law. Now, the other side of this is, under the 2009 Lisbon Treaty, it says under Article 6, the EU shall join the ECHR. Now that was signed
in
2009.
That's interesting.
So that's 14 years.
Yeah.
14 years of what would the Ramonas call it? Breaching international law.
Yeah, and which they're very keen on citing.
Yeah. And the other side is that in 2014, the European Court of Justice was presented with a package by the Commission that said, "Here you are. This is how we want to join the ECHR." And the ECJ took it away, and this is on public record, and said, oh, you can't do that because membership of the ECHR by the EU is incompatible with treaty law, EU treaty law. They're incompatible. So they still can't join. So they're continuing to breach international law.
And people continuing to foist it on others.
Yes. Yeah. And it's just a big hypocritical thing, just typical EU and typical Ramonas as well.
Typical. But just concluding on Northern Ireland, what we have in Northern Ireland is an effrontery to British sovereignty. We voted for the United Kingdom to leave the EU. The Tory party promised the country would leave the EU as one United Kingdom. What we have is Northern Ireland left behind, subject to foreign laws made by a foreign legislature, enforced by a foreign court. That is an abomination. It's an insult to the British people, and our government needs to get a grip of it.
Totally agree. And thank you very much for talking to me
tonight.
Thank
you, Jeff. Thank you.
So he and I are on exactly the same wavelength, and I have to wonder how long it will be before the DUP give their verdict on the Windsor framework, and if it's as damning as Ben Habib's. And now over to the boy on the naughty step, Richard.
So Nigel Farage may not have followed the stay-at-home rules. Ooh, naughty, naughty. But I am sure there are many others that didn't either. People like the then Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, and the then Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. To those that made the rules, abiding by the rules didn't matter. But Crocodile Tears, Mr. Matt Hancock, who would cry over the loss of his aunt's second husband's twice removed goldfish that he never met, he was determined to keep the people in fear and get the police in to enforce his rules based upon the science. Sorry. And we all did the right thing, didn't we? All of us. We did the right thing, didn't we? Well, if you're asking if I did the right thing, then the answer is, well, categorically, yes. I followed the rules to the letter. Whose rules I followed are another question entirely, but I did follow the rules. Did I stay at home and not socialise with friends and regularly drive back and forth between Newport and the Brecon Beacons? Doing as I wished, as I pleased, going where I wanted. Walk in the streets of Newport like Will Smith in I Am Legend. Did I do that? Oh, I can't remember. Did I wear something over my face in shops and supermarkets, as I was told to do? I can't remember if I did that either. Well, fancy me not being able to remember any of these things. Did I fall for any of it? I can't remember. I mean, I do remember everyone telling me how selfish I was and how I was placing Granny's life in danger, but I can't remember why. What could I have been doing to warrant such a terrible criticism to be being levied towards me? I do remember trying to stop people doing something with their arms. That's right, something with their arms. But my memory fails me. But I complied, yes, I most certainly did. But very few people listened to the little warnings I gave to them. And many of those people are now constantly sick. I can't think why. Members of my own family scoffed at me for suggesting they waited a little while to see if something worked and if it was safe. And unfortunately, many of them, they became rather ill. And some of them are becoming ill right now. Very odd. Anyway, have you all been good boys and girls and not like that dastardly Mr. Farage? And if there are any future lockdowns, will you comply with the rules and guidance? Will you roll your sleeves up for any future you know what? Let us know in the comment section below.